How late is too late when it comes to publishing a video? Hi, my name is Marco and welcome to another episode of the Storyline Sessions podcast. First of all, my apology to Adam Bassett for publishing this only now, as it was recorded a while back last year. Still, I feel this conversation holds value, and I also want to direct you to his work. Adam is an author, illustrator, and a UX/UI designer. He published his debut short story collection, Digital Extremities, last September. It shines a spotlight on ordinary people in a callous yet hopeful future. It's set in small towns and remote islands where neon flickers against old homes and oaks, and it paints a unique view of a traditional cyberpunk setting. I enjoyed both the collection and my chat with Adam, and I hope you will too. So, grab a drink, let's get comfortable, and let's get into this week's storyline session with Adam Bassett. Enjoy! Hey Adam, welcome to Storyline Sessions, how are you?
I'm doing great, yourself?
I'm doing well as well, and I'm really excited to talk about your short story collection, but also everything in between. So yeah, maybe we could start from like early reactions. You've sent out quite a few advanced readers copies, and I've really seen already some great comments. So how do you feel about that?
Oh, it's overwhelming, man. You know, genuinely, I went in with extremely low expectations. I went through this whole process like 8 years ago. I released my first short story collection and had expectations for that one, which did not even remotely pan out. And so for this one, it was very much just like, let's just see what happens. It'll be fine, whatever it is, you know. But people have been extremely kind. Like, you know, the critiques have been fair. Like a couple of people have said like, oh man, I wish this continued. And it's like, all right, sure, I get that. Like, that's a good problem to have, I guess. But most comments have been extremely positive, just like enjoying the settings, the different characters and stuff. And that was very much my worry going in. Because it's a short story collection, I can't just focus on one interesting character. I have to come up with a whole bunch. And so it's like, are they too similar? Are they going to be like similar enough where the same person can enjoy all of them? I ask every person who has finished it what their favorite was. And initially it was like trying to figure out what the strongest story was and what the weakest story was, and then like move forward and learn from that. But so many people have had completely different favorites, which has been so exciting for me, because it's like, oh, like not everybody's gonna have the same favorite story, and they're gonna take different things from different ones. And it's been really cool to see how there isn't quite a, like there's a trend, don't get me wrong, but there isn't quite a uniform opinion on them, which is awesome. Like just to have them all at a certain point where it's like, yeah, somebody's gonna enjoy each one. It's an extremely long answer to your very simple question, but yeah, it's been awesome.
No, it's really good, and I'm really glad to hear that, because, you know, having people want for more, that's the same thing like when people are critiquing some games. Oh, it's too short, so that's a good thing, you want more, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, push too hard against that.
Yeah, and speaking of being too short, like short fiction for me is something that I quite enjoy, and I also enjoy writing it, but also reading so many authors who do it quite well. And it's interesting seeing that even though people are constantly talking about attention spans, like people don't having the concentration to go for something, but still the trend in both sci-fi, fantasy, and generally like in the book space, I think even for like literary fiction, the books are quite long, like as are, for example, YouTube videos, podcasts. And for me, that's kind of a thing I'm noticing, that people are still quite wanting something that's long. And I'm surprised that short fiction isn't more popping off. Like for me, sometimes I've got a lot of work, got some stuff to get to. And for me, having a short story collection that's like bite-sized, for me, that's ideal at some points. Like you get a story, you conclude it, and even if you don't get back to the book like for 5 days, you're not constantly trying to remember, oh yeah, that's right, that thing happened. So why do you think more authors aren't trying their hand at short fiction?
I think there's a couple of things going on. We start writing what we enjoy reading, or seeing, or like whatever storytelling tool that we enjoy growing up. And so, you know, when you grow up reading novels or watching big movie series and things like that, it's like that's the thing to aspire to. There's kind of, I think, a social construction around big novels and series where it's like these are more valuable than anything that's shorter than them. The bigger a book is, the more valuable it is. And we see that perpetuated through adaptations where, like, the biggest adaptations that get the most money, the most funding, that are the prettiest, and, you know, the writing varies, but the most effort goes behind things like your Game of Thrones, your Rings of Power, your Wheel of Time, like these really long epic series, which ironically just get trimmed down for time. And so there's that whole like social aspect of it. But then also common wisdom within publishing, and I think self-publishing especially, is that if you can get readers hooked on one book and it's part of a series, then they will come back more likely for the next one and the next one and the next one. And so when you're trying to make it as a small indie author, you're realistically, you should be trying to do everything you can to retain readers. And that is one of the best ways to do it, is to have some kind of series that is long running, people want to keep coming back for. Which, you know, when does it become too long? You know, is the person who came for the first book going to show up for the 9th, 10th? I don't know. At a certain point, I know me as a reader, watcher of media, whatever it is, if I see there's too many seasons in a show or there's too many books in a series, I'm like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
And so there's this balancing act that is so much driven, I think, by marketing in that sense. And of course, like we just saw recently, there was something, some people were talking about like how publishers were encouraging authors to publish shorter epic fantasy. Like instead of, you know, 200,000 words or whatever the norm used to be, now it was like 30 or 50,000 words less than that. You know, it's still like over 150, but there was a slight reduction and people were beginning to pick up on it. And I think all within the span of a week, I saw like three people on YouTube posting different video essays about how like, is epic fantasy dying? It's like, no. But you had such a strong reaction to this perception that a couple of publishers were trying to get authors to trim down the size of their books. And rightfully so, because like you're talking about how people are struggling to find time in the day. So it's kind of a culmination of all these different factors of the social, the marketing, and also the pressures from publishers, which are trying to sell more books. So yeah, it's very complex. But I think that's why novels have retained such a high position and why short stories kind of get crowded out a little bit.
Yeah, and taking that into consideration, and you mentioned also your efforts a while back trying to also write short fiction. How did you get into it? Did you experiment with longer form first, or did from the start that you want to go into...
Oh, I was 100% suckered into the whole novels are better than anything else. that's why it's so easy for me to talk about. I thought novels were just the thing that you were supposed to do. And then I think it was around college I started to read more short fiction. I was in a course about short fiction and linked short stories. So for example, we read The Dewbreaker by Edwidge Dantica, which is a series of stories that follows a single family starting with the most modern day and going backwards in time. And so like the first story is from their daughter's point of view. The second story is from the father's point of view. And the third one might have been the mother or like someone the family knew. I don't know. But like it progressively goes backwards in time until the final story is when the mother and father meet during a very dramatic moment in Haitian history. And so you see sort of how they like escaped that and got to the States and formed a family, but sort of in reverse. And each story stands on its own. And I just thought that was like the coolest thing. Like I just loved that structure so much. I mean, all the stories we read that year were somewhat structured that way. And so it sort of opened a new door for me where it's like, we can have sort of a novel-like setting, but then structure it with all these individual moments that are each explore different things. And sometimes they're so weird. Like, short story collections genuinely allow you to just play with the format so much in ways that a novel doesn't really allow, usually. A Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan. It's told mostly, I believe, in third person, but there's some first. There's one second person story, which makes sense in the context of that story because the person is kind of having an out-of-body experience, and so he's uncomfortable, so the reader is feeling uncomfortable. And then there's one story that's entirely told through PowerPoint, and you have to, like, physically turn the book sideways to read it. It's so cool. Like, I wouldn't want a whole book like that, but because it's all like these shorter snippets, you're able to kind of play with it a lot more. And so yeah, that's how I got into it, is because I really enjoyed those formats and I started to play with it myself. And that's how the first thing that I wrote became a short story collection. This one is much less linked. Digital Extremities is all set in the same world. And there is like a moment, like very brief moments of when you can sort of see one impacting the other. But aside from one character who shows up twice, everything is pretty isolated. And so like that they sort of, you can learn about the world from one and apply that knowledge to the next. But they are definitely not as linked as some of those other stories, which was just a fun thing to play around with, a little bit of a more traditional collection, I guess.
And was that intentional?
Yes and no. So the first four stories were very much like just, I was interested in this kind of setting and what would happen in it. The first four being the first four that I wrote, not necessarily the first four in the collection. But then once I wrote those, I was like, oh, this is a real thing. Like, I'm actually writing something now. And then I started to think more critically about, like, all right, well, these stories are a little more lower action, more like cerebral, I guess. So I need a more action-oriented story. I need a happier story because these couple are pretty sad. And so the last four that I ended up writing were very much like, what am I missing from this world? What kinds of things can I say about it that I haven't already, and where can I find those stories? And so there was kind of like those two phases of, like, you know, the first part, I just screwing around and trying to figure out what I can do. And then the second half is like, I understand this setting more. What am I missing from these first couple? And so the division between them was less intentional and more like a result of just that process, I guess.
And the process as a whole, like, do you approach, when you got the ideas for the stories, do you approach each story like in a similar way? Do you how do you go about it? Like, did they just came about in some way, then you started figuring out, okay, this is a thing, or did you like plan them out? What's your flow?
It really depends. Like the first story, Alone Together, was the first one I wrote back, I think, in like 2020 2021. And that went through a lot of revisions of just me kind of figuring out what was this setting, what kind of story did I want to tell in it. And by the end, like, one of the last stories that I wrote was 36 Broadway Avenue, which is kind of in the middle of the collection. And that one, like, by then I had kind of figured out everything that I wanted to know about the world, and it was just a matter of like putting the pieces together. And so whereas, like, you know, those initial stories were extremely exploratory, just kind of like pantsing and figuring out along the way what I wanted to do, what these characters were and everything, by the time I got to the end, it was very structured of like, I need to hit these beats with the story. And there was still like a little bit of exploration. Like, I didn't know what the ending of that story was going to be when I began working on it. That took a little more time. Like, I was visiting family at the time, and I think like I'd started it and I kept coming back to it, and I kept either getting pulled away or couldn't quite figure out how to structure the ending of it, or how to like get to a certain point that I knew I wanted to happen. And then I think it was like on a walk with the dog, I was like, oh yeah, we're gonna have like this sort of cyclical structure, and it's gonna like represent this, and it's gonna reinforce these character beats. And I basically like ran back with the dog and got on the computer.
Nice, that like eureka moment.
Yeah. I mean, that's genuinely like just stopping for a little bit and going outside for a walk, or thinking about something else for a while, is like genuinely one of the most helpful things for me.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know who said it first, but if you're a writer, you're always writing. It's just like a matter of like if it's brewing in your head when you're walking your dog or actually trying to put something on the page. And yeah, the first story that you mentioned for me, like the entry point for it was like, is this gonna be like a Black Mirror thing? But over time, like by the end of it, but also like the other stories, we get a bit more, if I can say, like understated technology. Even though like the setting is quite futuristic, the as we can see in the years and the technology that you weave into it, but kind of still you have crumbs to be followed by the technology and set with like the broader world. But I think that like a mundane element in the futuristic world is interesting to me. It's kind of not relying on the flashy cyberpunk stuff to carry the story. So how was that balance for you, trying to keep it sci-fi and make those elements work while also focusing on the characters?
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps that a lot of the writing that I've done and the way that I have sort of learned to write in a lot of ways is very character focused. I don't know that I totally realized that myself until recently, but like, I guess like I'm not, you know, deep into the Star Trek, Star Wars lore. I am not, you know, like some of my favorite sci-fi is Doctor Who, which is very loose in terms of like the actual science. You know, stuff just kind of happens and you roll with it because it's fun. So I guess like that's the kind of sci-fi that I enjoy, is when, you know, it's not about the science, it's about the characters and the problems they're having, and the science is a tool, just like magic is in fantasy, to sort of perpetuate or to solve something. You know, it is a flashy, fun thing to do. Can be, in the case of technology especially, it can be a commentary on, you know, stuff that we're developing right now. You know, a lot of the stuff that I talk about in the book is like it's very close to our future, and so everything is at least an attempt at not going too far so that it feels, you know, unimaginable. You know, it's about people who are, for example, one character is working at a glass furnace, and it's like, all right, what practical things would they not necessarily need, but what could make them more efficient? Like, because, you know, companies are always looking for efficiency, so what can we reasonably assume would happen there? And so they develop heat shielding and, you know, all these kinds of more science fiction-y things, but it's like based on a real problem. God, what was the question?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it was on the balance of the technology, yes, and yeah, kind of cyberpunks.
I didn't think of it as much of a balance issue, because the story is not about the tech, it's about the person. And so, you know, like the whole point of Alone Together, which is, again, the first story, people will find this out very quickly. The whole point of it is there's a traumatic event that happens, and people use this memory removal technology to kind of, you know, take it out. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? I try not to pass judgment on that. The story isn't about whether or not that technology should be used. It's about, like, this exists, and so what are we going to do about it? And the different characters come up with different conclusions and all that kind of stuff. So it's really about them, not the technology.
For sure. And I think that in this kind of world that you're building is really a good focal point, because as you said, we are starting on as a society, as people, on these things that you're kind of imagining going forward, and like listening to interviews about like Neuralink or like people already paying with chips in their hands, which like just 10 years ago would sound like complete sci-fi to me. So yeah, I think that it's much easier to be just like,
how convenient would that be to not carry around like a wallet or anything and just give it a little tap?
Yeah, and I don't know if you're aware, like some people have already done that. Like people have built in like NFC chips in their hands. Like it's not like super common, but there are guys who are just walking around and pressing them. Yeah, so it's insane. But yeah, and did you like some motifs? Like for me, one of the things that stood out was the eye modifications, because you do have some like creative cyberpunk stuff that's weaved into it, even though it's based on like something that's building up, and it's not like super, as you said, far off, something we couldn't even imagine. But for me, like, the eye modifications were quite prominent. So is that something that you worked on to like especially signify some stuff that like is happening with the people? Because for me, that motif was like really, really engaging.
Yeah, I mean, the most popular eye modification was like the lenses that get introduced right away. They're basically just like contact lenses that have a few extra features. Like, they can read off your text messages or tell you the time or the weather. Like, very simple stuff in the beginning. And by the end, there is a character who has a much more complex eye modification where they can do things like see infrared. You know, the way that I approach that is very much like similar in the same way of like, how would these kinds of technologies advance? And so, like, a cell phone, for example, very few people in these stories have one because there's not really much of a need. At a certain point, like, your lens tells you all of your text messages. You still need a phone for a little while, but eventually you get cochlear implants that go directly into your ear, and that just streamlines the auditory end of it. And so you just... It's kind of about like implanting the devices that you used to need to carry around with you. Now you don't need to carry it around. You know, very similar. I would hazard a guess to like very similar to how like tablets have become more prominent over the years. How we began with smartphones and we had these like smaller handheld devices, and now as people, you know, move toward touchscreen devices, they become more comfortable with that. They become less in need of a full computer. A tablet becomes this really reasonable choice. And so I sort of see lenses a very similar way, where it's like, you know, phones are kind of big now and they have a lot of stuff that, at least me personally, I don't use. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are that way, who like just need a way to contact others. And so, you know, that's one of the impetuses for like a lens kind of tool, like you see in the book. The guy at the very end who has all those extra tools, like the infrared vision, he's former military. And so it's like, you know, what kinds of things would the military do with advanced technology that can give people different kinds of vision? Like, obviously.
Yeah. And like, for also another interesting thing is the locations, because you kind of jump around both year wise and location wise. And how did you go about that? Was like some locations, for example, for me it was interesting. One of my favorite stories was the one that's set in Argentina. So it's really interesting to see like putting people in different places at like mostly the same time in time frame and in that kind of a world and exploring like different facets of it. So walk us through that a bit. How did you go about your locations? Did the characters like spring from them, or like did you think about where could this be set?
Both of those happened. So the Argentina story, that began because I wanted to tell a story that surrounded the ice trade, which is sort of, global warming continues, not hard to imagine. And there are a host of ramifications of that, but beyond the ice just melting. But one of those is that because the ice melts, Antarctic resources are easier to get. And on top of that, you know, people are mining for fresh water more, resources are being used up, etc. And so ice from Antarctica becomes a source of fresh water. And now there's a race to go and get it. And there was a story I wanted to write that was surrounding that. Originally, it was going to take place on the Antarctic Peninsula or somewhere near there. I tried a few versions of it and it just didn't quite work. And so Argentina became a really good spot, like the southern tip of it, where ships could come from Antarctica and then refuel or drop off their shipment. And then that ice could continue on to the rest of the world to be used as fresh water. So that location was very driven by like the job that character had, and the kind of, not like the stuff that was going on in the background that I wanted to talk about. The story that takes place in Italy, I really loved the setting of Civita di Agnareggio, which I probably just totally butchered, so I'm sorry, Italians. but I love that setting of like this, it is a old Etruscan city that is on top of a hill, and the hill is falling apart and the city is collapsing, and it's like called The Dying City for a reason. And I really loved that setting. And I was like, what would people do to preserve it? And what would emerge around that preserved city? So I had this idea for like these retaining walls that would be put around it. And it's like, how, like, that's a really expensive project. Like, how do you rationalize that? Oh, let's build a whole city around it, like this really big economic center, where like the initial purpose was to preserve the city. This other thing emerged around it as this really big powerhouse, and that like that people were able to build up very quickly. Whereas, you know, other ones like Alone Together takes place in Burlington, Vermont. I've been to Burlington, Vermont a lot. I grew up near here. I live in Vermont now, so it was easy. Plus, it was a really good representation of like a populated place that is pretty off the map, not too populated, and kind of set the vibe for what I was going for with the collection of like, you know, we're in this futuristic setting, but we're in these remote places.
Yeah, and like when it all came together, how did you know like this is it? I don't want to like add more stories to it, even though they're loosely linked. Still, like they feel like a whole, and like I think that it is like fitting where you end. We won't spoil it, but when did you decide like I think this is it?
I mean, right up until the very end, I was still workshopping a couple of stories. Honestly, like. I think like right before I sent off ARC copies, I was like, well, what if I just add one more? One of those ended up getting published by Smash Bear Publishing. They have a short story anthology coming out at the time of recording very soon. I genuinely don't know when it's going to be out, so maybe it'll be out by the time this comes out. I don't know. But it's called Blooms of Hope, I believe. And there's going to be a short story that was originally set within this world in there. That is also going to be kind of tweaked a little bit because they wanted it to be fantasy, so I'm going to bring it back to sci-fi and re-release it as well within the Campfire version of Digital Extremities. It'll be like an extra bonus story for people who like it. Only like 900 words, not a thing huge, but yeah. So like, it was tough to say when it was done, but it was also like, if I don't stop now, I am just going to keep prodding at it until, you know, I just never publish it ever. Which I'm trying to get away from. Like, I've been working on a longer novel for probably like 2 years before I really got serious about this. And this project was very much like, this is a thing that I know I can complete. I want to go to some events in 2025, and so 2024 has to be the year that I start publishing things. Because, like, if I don't just, you know, set some dates and stick to them, then nothing will ever happen.
And how did you make that switch?
Like, how did my process change, or like?
Yeah, I mean, because I know, like, as most of us who write anything know, you can twinkle around like with everything and just like try and make it shape it up a bit. But when did you like decide I need to get stuff out there? Aside from like I'm going to go to events.
Yeah, well, I mean, it all comes back to like last year in 2023, I went with my work. We went to talk about Campfire's new reading app over at Dragonsteel, and we were telling people about some books that were already up in there. It was just a really cool experience. Like, I'd never been to a convention before. I live in rural places, like Vermont. So there's not a whole lot of things out here where I get to go out and meet people who do this. But going out to Dragonsteel, like, you know, I got to see a bunch of other authors, a lot of people who were, like, just, you know, they just recently published something, be in the insanity that is Sanderson's space and everything. And that was just a really good experience of like that was when I was like, I need to get serious about this because I want to be a part of this again, not just on like my job's terms, but on mine. Like, I want to come here and share my stuff and like hang out with these authors more and all that kind of stuff. And so that's what changed. I started like setting dates and sticking to them after that. And so like, even though I really wanted to add just like one more story, but I knew it would just lead to one more and one more after that. And like, oh, maybe this one's all wrong. And it's like, no, I have a date to get ARCs out by and all that kind of stuff. And And when the ARCs went out, it was like, this is a finished product now. Like, seeing people begin to read it and react to it, and we already talked a little bit about some of the reviews, that was very much like, there's nothing missing from this anymore. Like, I'm sure I could make it a little better. I'm sure I could add to it, but, like, that is not as valuable as moving on to the next project.
For sure. And, like, the process of getting it out, like, better readers, editors, how did all that come along?
I had published one thing before, but that was with a small publisher, and they kind of had their own team, and I was within that. Whereas this project was my first time doing it all on my own. And so I, like, reached out to some people who had done it recently before me. I reached out to Adrian Gibson, and I was just like, tell me everything about how it went. What would you do again? What would you not do again? What would you recommend for this and this and this? Where should I go to get it printed? What do I do? Help. And I would go and ask people these questions. I brought on 3 different editors to look at the stories, in addition to beta readers, just because I know the perception around self-publishing is like, they're not reliable, they're not well edited, whatever. So I did, like, everything that I could to prevent that perception from being a real thing. And with ARCs, I signed up for somebody's ARC for the first time. I knew they were out there, but I'd never really, like, known how to get involved with them or anything. But somebody, I came across somebody, and I participated in theirs first before I did my own, just to kind of learn what that process was like, see what they did. And theirs went very well. That was Amber Toro for her story Umbra. Hers went off spectacularly. And so I took a lot of inspiration from what she did with, like, how she set up her forms, how she set up the delivery methods through BookFunnel and everything. And so it was just a big process of seeing what other people are doing, learning from that, and then taking the parts that I liked and applying it to my own setup.
Yeah, that really makes sense. And being in the space you are, you mentioned a couple of times your work and things you did with Campfire. How did, like, that come about? Because you've clearly been a sci-fi and fantasy fan for a long, long time. And, like, when did you just first get into the space?
When did I get into the sci-fi fantasy space, or when did I get into working with Campfire?
Yeah, I mean both, like, sci-fi and fantasy, and then how Campfire came about.
Yeah, so sci-fi fantasy, I mean, like, very early age, I started reading the Warrior Cats series, which is shockingly so popular still. Like, I kind of forgot.
Is that the one that has, like, 100 novels or something like that?
Oh, yeah, it's written by, like, 3 or 4 different people, and they have, like, a million series, and they're all about cats living in the wild who are separated into different clans. That was my childhood growing up. I loved that first series. So, yeah. That's probably where it all starts. But then, like, as I moved away from that, it was like, oh, this Aragorn thing is pretty cool. you know, really enjoying Doctor Who, and you know, it just sort of branched out from there as I saw things that were less cat focused. And yeah, so, like, you know, I began to write my own stuff probably. Ever since I started reading all that, I fell off of reading for a little bit, got back into it probably when I was in high school, and that again pushed me to write more. And through college, I ended up adding a creative writing major, a minor, and then that became a major, which don't do that. Like, genuinely, it was super fun. But I once told a professor, he was like, anybody in the arts is screwed. you're not going to get a job. And this is a professor of, I think it was, like, literary analysis or something. So, real pot calling the kettle black. and he said this, and after class I was like, so what do you make of my double major in creative writing and studio art? And he just laughed until I left the class.
That's encouraging.
I didn't change my majors, so I guess it wasn't that bad, but he was a fun guy. We had a debate the first class all about whether Mean Girls was or was not the best movie, and it was. That's how I got into sci-fi fantasy. I started reading about cats, and that became the whole thing.
Cats, dragons, and then Mean Girls.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a... there's your title, I guess. I don't know, man. So then, you know, I was writing my own stuff. I tried publishing that initial short story collection, and it had some minor successes, but kind of fell off pretty quickly, and then kind of went back to the drawing board after a little break. And sometime during all of that, I was working in marketing for a local newspaper at the time. I was looking for a change, and an opportunity came up that my sister knew about, which was all about UX and UI design. I got into that because it was like similar enough to the art and writing stuff that I'd already done, but it like seemed at least like a really good opportunity to get into a new field. I got in like right before things got really, really tough, and it was tough at the time. That whole industry is like so overpopulated with new people coming out of boot camps and stuff like I took. I would not necessarily recommend anyone else do what I did at this point. Like, it's so hard to find anything. But I was luckily enough able to touch base with Campfire, who I had previously spoken with because I was a volunteer at World Building Magazine, and they reached out to us to put an ad for Campfire in that free digital magazine. And one thing led to another. They weren't necessarily looking for a designer, but I came with a, you know, a familiarity with writing, and their target audience is like speculative fiction people, which is what I do. And I had only recently become a UX UI designer, but I have all this experience previously with graphic design and a general just like artistic knowledge and stuff. So I ended up doing like a temporary thing with them, and then that became a permanent thing, and I've been there for 4 years now. Yeah, it was very, very much just like, you know, if there's a takeaway from that, shoot your shot, I guess, because like I said, they were not looking for me.
But they found you. And you also do like maps. That's also one interesting thing that somehow on top of all that, you managed to find yourself also into map making. So when that first started, and how did it go so far?
I don't know how it went so far. That's a tough one. But that started because I just wanted maps for my own books. And I grew to love drawing maps. I had like a whole watercolor book full of maps for this totally not Game of Thrones book that I was writing at the time. back when I think I was probably in like high school or something. I don't know. So that's how it started, is I just wanted my own maps. And then, I mean, I was taking art courses already, especially through like high school and college. I was able to apply a lot of that to the map design. And then some friends asked me to make one. No, I made one for a friend as like a birthday present or something. I was like, this is something I can do for free. And then she ended up loving it. And she actually came back and did a whole commission with me for a different map. And then another friend did that. And I was like, what is happening? And so I put out a couple of feelers, and I just was like, hey, if anybody wants a map done, I guess I'm free, like I'm available. And then one or two people responded to that, and they were like, hey, can you do this? And it's just kind of escalated to the point where like this is a thing that I do on the side when I have time now. I'm currently working on another map for BH Pierce, who's a friend of mine from the World Building Magazine days, and I think he gets all of his maps done by me now. I don't know that he has anyone else, but just like every couple of months, maybe like once or twice a year, I get a message from him, and he's like, hey, I've got this idea for a new D&D campaign or something, or like, I'm writing this new book and I want a map for it. And it's like, all right, sure.
Yeah, so you're now his map guy.
Yeah, and that's kind of pushed me to for work. One of our people in marketing, Amanda, has asked me to write a bunch of stuff about map design and like, you know, different things that we can put on our blog about it. And that kind of coupled with thinking about those events that I want to go up to next year. I know a lot of people who are there are going to be authors. And so I was trying to think of like something I could offer them. And it hit me like, I'm already writing about this map design stuff for work. Like, what if I compiled all of it into a book and added some new stuff? And so that's the next project, is I'm working on a nonfiction book about making fictional maps for your fantasy and sci-fi books. I had to explain that to some family recently, and they're just like, okay. but yeah, it's very fun. It's like, so for example, you know, we break down the very basics. Like, I'm not a scientist or geologist or any of those big fancy words. But, you know, I'll do things like break down the very basics of plate tectonics and try and discuss a way where it's like you can use them not at all to make your continent, like the shape of the coastline and everything. You could use them strictly and like really map stuff out. Like there are, I know there are people like Artifexian who do this, who will like create the tectonic plates before you create anything else on the map. And then what I like to do is some sort of middle approach where it's like, I'm going to focus on the current state of the map, not its history or where it will go. But I'm going to keep in mind that the way plates work is like, you know, they're going to form mountain ranges or, you know, these canyons or like, you know, how do they, like the way that they work informs the way the land looks and the way the islands form and stuff like that. And so it's like, you know, that is one way that you can sort of arrange the map. And then on top of that, is there a way you can use that in your fiction? And most of the time, that's, the answer is going to be no, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, you look at N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth series, and her whole magic system is tectonic related. It's about stopping or releasing, you know, energy that is created by the earth or by these plates shifting. And like, if there's an earthquake, these magic users can stop it or redirect it or something. And so there's a lot of ways in which just that one example, knowing a little bit about tectonic plates and, you know, geology can really affect the storytelling. In addition to, you know, where do you place your cities? What do you call them? You know, how could a climate impact the religion of a people? Like, these are all things that the map is directly impacting about your story, or that you should reflect on your map if your story includes these things.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like when you think about it like that, the whole aspect of impact of both story and the map, and map for the story, and so many things that you need to think about is not that something intuitive for a lot of people. Like when you just look at a nice map of a world, you don't actually think actively. So I'm sure that will be useful for a lot of people. And I also like talked to quite many authors, both here and off the podcast, about maps because I do love them. And I know that like for some people in the indie space, self-publishing, it's sometimes not viable to commission a map to cut costs. And also some people who are trad, some publishing houses don't want them to have a map. But I think that still a lot of people do love them. And I was thinking
I had somebody who was publishing with a small trad publisher reach out to me, and they were like, the publisher is not giving me a map, and so I'm going behind their back. I want you to make one for me.
That's awesome.
It was my favorite message I ever got.
And did they go with it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's The Ascendature by Robin Dabney. It's out right now.
That's great. That's really good. And when you take a look like at some like more traditional older fantasy and sci-fi, and especially fantasy when we talk about world maps, and now in the modern space, what do you think are like some of the differences from your side of things, like when you look at some older maps and now, what's the trend?
Well, tectonic plates, we didn't know about those until recently. Like, tectonic plate theory is very new. Tolkien was not around to have known about these. And so like Middle Earth, you see these extremely square-shaped mountains all around Mordor. Like, it forms a perfect little box, which has always bugged me. The Shannara Chronicles as well, like the shape of the bounds of that region. Because I think it has a coastline, but like the bounds are dictated by like a big forest or the mountains or something. Those are the size of the page. Like, they are not organic in any way. It's just a box. And so that's what I see a lot in like the really big old fantasy maps, which is like pretty understandable because it's not like they necessarily knew better or like it was designed by somebody who would have, but it just always gets me. It's like you have a little variation. Like, you can have really linear things. Like, you look at the Andean mountains or the Carpathians, and like there are some very straight lines, but it's like there's also examples of ones that are not. It's, yeah, so that's a big one. We've also just learned a lot more about how people exist on a map. Like, your settlements and stuff are generally going to be near sources of water. There's a certain distance that you can travel based on your mode of transportation before you have to stop. Like, if you're working on like a purely like medieval setting, a lot of people are going to be moving by just walking around, and you can you can get around roughly 10 miles a day, or 5 miles there and back, pretty comfortably. Beyond that, it starts to get a little bit tough. And so you start to see in these older maps of places that only really had foot traffic, there are towns roughly 5 to 10 miles apart, like all in a line. Whereas in like newer places, like out in the American West, for example, which was kind of settled after wagons and cars began to be more of a thing, there's less regular positioning of locations. Yeah, little things like that. Stuff that like mostly doesn't matter.
Yeah, but you notice when it isn't there, or when it is there, yeah, if it's not right.
Yeah, when you start to notice it, it's hard not to notice. But I think the biggest thing for me is like make the map look like it's a part of the world. It's not just a random map that you have. It should be like, so one of the maps that I made for Robin for the Ascendature, I was talking with her about this, and we decided to like on the map do things like credit it to this doctor who made it. Like, you know, having like stuff on the map that isn't helpful for the reader to navigate it, but does make it feel like it's part of the story, you know, little things like that. Brandon Sanderson's maps as well for his books do this a lot. The guy who makes those, Isaac, he's a big proponent of making maps like an artifact of the world. So having things like the frame and the legend and like these kind of external things around the map kind of reflect the culture of the people. Like they'll put the different symbols of all the medals around it and stuff, and like try to like incorporate all these different things into it, which I think are really cool.
Yeah, and circling back to your collection, we see above the stories you have these little vignettes that aren't quite maps, full-blown maps, but you still kind of find a way to sneak them in. Were they there from the start?
Not there from the start. I was making maps of the stories settings from the beginning. Those will also be included in the kind of extended content on the campfire version, just because that's where it's easy to put them. I have posted a few of them on socials and stuff too, if you want to see them there. I think my like map portfolio has a couple. But yeah, I always knew that I wanted to map out those locations. I only added those vignettes above the chapter titles pretty late in the process. I had to kind of like resize them and recolor them and get them all prepared a little bit differently. But yeah, that was a fun addition to include.
And your cover, how many versions were there? Did you like decide quickly on that? Did you have like an idea what you wanted for it?
I had an idea of what I wanted for it, but the exact way that we went about it took a little while to find. I worked with Ixelle on that. She did a fantastic job. She presented like, I think 8 or 10 different options of like how, I mean, in total by the end, not all at once. But we went through a lot of versions and ended up on something just kind of nice and simple. And like really, I wanted to make sure to showcase this sort of distant rural space among the kind of more urbanized forefront. One of the reasons I brought her on to do the cover is because her work is so colorful, and I was really important. That was really important to me too, because I feel like it's so easy for futuristic stuff to kind of end up very drab, or like cyberpunk is very like soaked in blues. And I wanted to bring in a bigger variety of color, not just like the typical purple and blue neon, but like, you know, bring in some of those reds and oranges and greens and like little bits and stuff like that. We did forget about the text that would have to go on there. I don't think either of us thought about that. And then at the very end, I found a spot for it. I did the lettering on the cover. And so I worked with a bunch of different options and tried a few things. I'm pretty happy with how it ended up. But yeah, there was like a good week there where I was panicking, like, I did not think about this.
That UI wasn't in the plan.
I was just not focused on it. Like it was very much like, I have a person who is doing the cover. I do not have to put thought into this anymore. I'm just going to focus on the editing and the map designs and all that kind of stuff. And I was working with another artist on character illustrations, which I've also posted a few of on socials and will be in the campfire version too. So every every story in the collection has an accompanying illustration of the characters in it at some moment from within that story.
Yeah, so, and
a lot going on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, but it is like evocative, and you are really a visual type, so yeah. it makes sense. But like seeing that you already have a vision for like the characters, the setting, both like visually and the feeling of it. What do you think is like the best medium this could be adapted in? Like, do you see it maybe more of a game or like TV series, as we discussed? Like, yeah, I know. I mean, it is like for a reason they are short stories, but a lot of people and influences we've talked about are in different media, so I've got to ask.
I mean, I haven't really thought about it much, if I'm being honest, because it's not really a possibility for me. But I mean, I think it would be all right as a mini series or something, maybe like a little anthology that way. I don't think a game makes much sense because there's not much action. I mean, you could have action in this setting, but if you're like doing a faithful adaptation, I don't think that would work.
Yeah, maybe like kind of an adventure or even like a visual novel type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like maybe some of the stories could blow up. Like,
I could actually see a visual novel working where like you have to make tough choices.
Yeah, exactly. Like multiple stories, and like because of the storylines, I know that like a lot of people are getting increasingly into those types of games that aren't like action focused. So I think they are making a return.
I do not want to write anything that has multiple endings.
Choose your own adventure.
I heard all about how, like, the old Telltale games, how they would begin as, like, one script, and by, like, they would always have five episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And by the fourth one, the script had expanded, like, 40 times the size of the original. Just because of, like, all the different paths people could be on, the things different characters had to react to. Just, like, I have so much respect for people who even attempt to do that.
Yeah, I can imagine the stress, and still some people are like, there isn't enough variety in the end, like you end up in similar ends. Like, what could you do else, like in such huge script, and how would you get to it? I can imagine it's a pain.
Yeah.
And would you do some like game writing in the future? Is that something that appeals to you?
I have a little bit of a background in card game design, actually. I used to work with Smunchy Games. We published two versions of a game called Frey, which was kind of like tic-tac-toe if you put Magic the Gathering on top of it, which was super fun. I loved doing it. I would have loved to do writing for it, but it wasn't really the type of game that did it. I most of my role was just like coming up with cards and balancing them, and then the actual cards were based on characters and things from a larger tabletop RPG setting that Sean Smunchy had made. So he came in and was like, this name's gotta change, this is gonna be more flavorful, or you know, whatever the case may be. Yeah, no, that'd be super fun. I would love to get back into game design in some way, but industry's a little volatile right now.
To say the least.
Yeah,
but it's safe to say you're a man who wears many, many hats. So yeah. And before I let you go, we've talked quite a bit like about your future plans, but like in the immediate future, Digital Extremities, and then what are some of the next steps that we can expect from you?
Yeah, so Digital Extremities is coming out September, I believe, the 24th. So it's on pre-order right now. You can go grab it if you're interested in a short story collection, cyberpunk, slice of life stuff. After that, the map design book comes out. I expect that will be the early 2025. I'm already working with a cover artist on it, and have got it out in the hands of a couple of beta readers. A little more work to still do on it. There's a couple of notes that I've left myself already, like go back and fix this. But I'm hoping to get that out fairly soon. I am working on a third project right now. It's very, very early though, so I don't quite want to say a whole lot about it, but that may be out in 2025 as well. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye out, but first I'm excited to see more people getting their hands on your short story collection and seeing the reactions to it, and fingers crossed that the launch goes super well, and I'm sure it will. I've enjoyed it quite a lot, so excited for everything that's come.
Awesome, thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam, for coming on to Storyline Sessions, and wish you all the best.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, bye. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Storyline Sessions podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Again, apologies to Adam Bassett. I hope you're going to check out his work using the links below. If you're interested in storytelling in any kind of media, keep following the Storyline Sessions, both here and on Instagram. My name is Marco, and I'll see you next time. Keep creating stories.